He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you.
It is indeed, and the automobile industry is facing a couple of issues going on right now. One, I don't know how serious should be, but they think it's serious from the standpoint of productions, suppliers, parts, and all the other thing. And that's us. Everybody knows about it, the coronavirus issues that have dealt factories blows in production in China, parts people, companies production in China, and anything else that has to do with getting parts or cars from those factories affected by the coronavirus problem, which has resulted in closings, to spreading now maybe into other parts of Europe and all that.
Right. Well, here's my question about the parts. Have parts always been sourced in? Was that a supply chain that was moved out, or was that a supply chain that it shouldn't have?
It actually is interesting because I was reading about that as well. Fiat has had to halt production of one of their lines because of a lack of availability of parts. Well, we didn't really think that Fiat or other manufacturers were necessarily getting their parts from China, but obviously they have been and are. So like Robin just said, it is putting it is throwing
crimp.
Yeah. For sure,
but nobody really focused. Nobody really focuses. There's an old jingle in my head. Yeah. Delco Auto Parts.
Okay,
where are they from?
But this could have happened in Mexico. It could have happened anywhere else in the world. There's a virus like this.
No question about the virus.
So it's not really blaming China for the. China is the source of the whole virus situation, and it's coincidental that all of a sudden we're realizing that a lot more parts maybe being produced in China than we thought.
It is still a global economy.
The coincidental aspect is, I think, that in the past years, people have not focused on, it's like, okay, well, where is it coming from? And does it matter? Because it was obviously infinitely cheaper to export.
This problem of where parts come from and whether they're single source or whether there are multiple sources available also spreads to the second part that I will bring in right now because you just gave me the way to do it, and that is a report out that Audi has halted production of the e-tron SUV to resolve production issues, including battery supply bottlenecks and other problems with battery production. Again, going to a production source, which at the moment has been a single source production of battery cells for Audi e-tron vehicles. And the question is, you know, you go to single source or multiple source so you have the backup situation available if you do have a problem spot or general on production of components of automobile production or the automobiles themselves.
And to me, you know, as a complete civilian, it would be like saying, well, all right, your vocation is real estate. Do you want to sell one house at a time? It would just seem as though prudence would dictate, but it may not be.
I didn't want to get so much into that concept. You can talk about it if you want, but the issue of the automobile industry right now is in flux. Jay has alluded to it in past shows for other reasons, not this particular situation, but lots of things are going on in the automobile industry, including the transition to, I suspect, an overproduction, if they can not have shortages, of electric cars coming on. There's an article out saying that there are too many electric trucks on the drawing boards about to be thrown into the pickup truck market. And, of course, I still say that battery capacity and durability and cold weather and all the other things that go on with battery power usage is going to be a big bigger issue for pickup truck sellers than electric cars are going to be for cars. No, I think the buyers aren't going to buy them.
That's what I'm saying.
Which means that it's going to be a problem for the sellers.
I don't necessarily agree.
Well, of course not.
No, no, it's not a question about agree, disagree. What I'm trying to figure out are the practical. I mean, at this particular moment, I'm trying to figure out the practicalities because, as we know about many industries, especially now, and this, the creation of the notion and the actual selling of the product are vastly separate. It's like, oh, what you really want is a three-wheeled such and such, and then it comes to market, and it turns out that no, actually, no one really does want a three-wheeled such and such, or very few people do.
Well, I think that may be more of a problem for the pickup electric pickup market starting up than it is for the auto the passenger car vehicle. Because I think we know Tesla has been the model of success in the electric car industry, and they are continuing to be. Audi is trying to get into it. Porsche is trying to get into it. Ford and all the other companies are trying to get into it.
VW is getting into it.
But you've still got the problem of people trying to decide what the minimum standards are going to be for electric powered cars to be satisfactory.
Well, don't you still
you're talking
need
about
batteries?
Range?
Yes.
Well, my point is, if you look at like the truck market, the light trucks, aka pickup truck market, and those trucks that are used for work purposes, I think electric fleets and electric trucks sales in general are actually looking bright in the pickup truck market. I mean, pickup trucks are not vehicles that are driven cross country or even hundreds of miles a day. I mean, these are. If you're using a pickup truck for work, you're going to a job, back from a job, you're doing small trips, you're loading it like crazy. You may be towing a lot. You know, it's a workhorse, but I don't think...
But it can manage... And the question is, can it manage that workhorse rate?
Well, it can if your battery capacity is ample. And one of the pickup truck makers coming to the market, but not yet there, not yet producing trucks, claims their pickup truck's going to have a 600-mile daily range under full charge.
Which one are you talking about? Rivian or
Nikola?
No,
it's not Rivian. It's Nikola, I think it is. Yeah. And with that in mind, they are also going to have plugs on these trucks to run electric tools, and they're going to say that these trucks will be able to make those tools run for 12 hours a day if they had to either at the work.
Makes a lot of sense truck. Having the pickup truck.
And that's going to make a lot of sense going against what I just started out saying.
Right.
But my point.
But they're going to have – all the makers are going to have trucks with this kind of battery capacity in them or else they're not going to sell them.
But
look at the Audi e-tron right now. The Audi e-tron is not selling well in its base form because it's got a battery range of roughly 210 miles in the standard form. Whereas we are all talking on this show, I think, Jay's included, that you've got to have 300 or better range in your vehicle inventory to start selling electric cars in a successful way.
I agree.
Why is the Audi e-tron only 200?
Because they decided to put
a Nissan Leaf.
Because the European manufacturers, and basically right now we're looking at the VW group,
okay.
right? Because
yes.
Porsche with the Taycan, Audi with the e-tron, and Volkswagen's ID and other electric vehicles coming to market are all VW
branded corporate vehicles.
But the consensus so far in Europe has been more on how quickly we can recharge as opposed to how far we can go on a particular range. So the emphasis has been to how quickly can we recharge a car? Can we do it in 20 minutes versus having to wait for
half an hour, 40 minutes on a
I hate to say this. I'm very not very technically minded when it comes to electric vehicles. but I guess that one emphasis, you know, the emphasis on range goes in the opposite direction of trying to make it so that the vehicle can be charged very quickly.
One of the things that I think when you get all the way down to people dealing with stuff is – Jay, I know that you're incredibly patient. You don't speed. You dodder along at 22 miles an hour, even if in a 35.
Exactly.
So I can absolutely see you organizing an airport run where you have to wait 20 minutes to charge your vehicle.
I
Are there any charging spots to interrupt a minute at the cell phone parking places that you can park?
The big ones like at JFK, no, there are not.
Okay.
And not yet. There has to be.
But that would be a good place for them.
But I'll tell you, you go in a cell phone lot, and I'll go from one thing to another. You go in a cell phone lot, for instance, at JFK, and I've been there a few times. I've only seen one or two Teslas with livery plates. Having said that, there's a company in California called Tesloop that organizes, basically they do shuttle runs between, I think, L.A. and a few other cities in California. And they run exclusively a fleet of Teslas. And a lot of them have between 300,000 and 400,000 miles. And interestingly, there's been a report, a very detailed report on a Tesla Model X with over 400,000 miles on the odometer.
Testing the durability.
Yeah,
and this company potential.
Company is very good at keeping records. I mean, they have spreadsheets for every single car, and they've been compiling data extensively, and it was published. And the quick analysis is they spent $20,000 on repairs over 400,000 miles. And the car is still running, by the way. Now, those repairs include the usual batteries, brakes.
Bearings.
Bearings, but you have half shafts. You have battery replacement. I think they replaced the battery on that car at 300,000 miles.
Which is wonderful range prediction for batteries. And batteries have been, just to add, really, key goes on, battery durability has been rather fantastic in the electric car vehicle range, whether it be hybrids or electric cars.
Starting with the Prius, where the expectation
with the Prius,
was way
higher. We were very skeptical, and I was
There have been battery warranties, and Toyota had battery warranties, and everybody else but Hyundai has battery warranties that have limited the warranty coverage of the batteries to roughly 100,000 miles, but they're being exceeded in the usage range significantly to people who have gone 150,000 miles and traded in a Prius, for example, but had the original battery pack still running fine.
I'll be honest, in this particular case, I was reading through the report and I did not see what the cost for that battery is. So I don't, for the replacement of the battery at 300,000 miles.
At one point, it was $7,500 in the very early days of Prius.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. And that was the projected battery cost.
So the bottom line is that
if it's 20, let's take the 20,000, let's add 7,500. Let's just say it wasn't.
We're looking at a cost per mile, which is always what fleet managers and if you're looking at cost of ownership,
massive improvement.
It's always a cost per mile. And, that Tesla is running at 7 cents a mile in operation cost. And when you factor in that they've actually replaced things like seats and body panels, the inside trim, because after a while, that wears out too, which we don't usually replace in our cars. 7 cents a mile is pretty darn good.
And what is the average for just a regular car or fleet, It's like 13 cents, 18 cents, 20 cents.
I think it's hard to get into
it's
that.
It's under a dollar, but I don't know how far under.
No, it's way under
way
a dollar. But getting to that 5 cent a mile.
Oh, no, I can't imagine. But I'm just trying to do comparing. Again, 18, 20, 30, do you have any sense? No
the
sense.
Important part of this whole discussion is that electric cars, once they go 300 plus miles for U.S. use, and I wanted to go back to the 200-mile Audi e-tron thing and the European satisfaction level, which I think is lower than the American satisfaction level, because Jay, being European, based and knowledgeable, would, I hope, agree that the Europeans don't on a daily basis necessarily drive as far between jobs and all that as Americans do. Right. And so they don't need 300-mile advertised capability right out of the block, whereas I think in the U.S. you do need that, because New York and
I'm
back.
I'm sorry, very few people drive 300 miles a day to go to work and
correct.
Back. Okay,
but you
drive an hour and a half, and that's fine. And again, you can go to work with a car that has a 200-mile range.
Correct.
Most people don't drive 200 miles. Even if you're here in the northwest corner of Connecticut, in the tri-state area, and you do commute to the city, it is 100 miles. You can go and back.
It's not 100 miles.
But you can't
back.
Go and back to Boston in one day.
But it's 200 miles to go and back.
Miles,
and most,
okay.
And, workplaces are installing, charging stations. I know maybe in the cities it's kind of hard to have.
That's what I'm wondering. It's like, how do you
Well, certainly parking on the street in New York, you can't find a charging station very quickly, okay? You'd have to go to garages.
Right, and so that's not inexpensive.
And the charging stations are being mapped out. They're on all Tesla vehicles and probably all true electric vehicles. I think the electric stations are part of the computer programs that are envelopes that are in the cars. And now I can tell you there is a GPS, portable GPS, such as this now, mapping all the charging stations. But why have them for cars that aren't EVs showing me where all the Tesla
But practically speaking, you drive to the city, right? You have to put your car in a garage that has X number of charging stations. So that's going to cost you anywhere between, depending on how long you have to stay, a chunk of change. Plus, what is to say that their charging stations aren't already being used by their regular customers?
But here we go to the range thing, Jill, and stop it here because I don't want to keep going about that. If you've got a 300-mile range starting out from Connecticut, you don't have to go to a place with a charging station, okay?
Yep. Yeah.
Point. That's the point.
No, can I say something else? People who are really working in the city from up here, most of them take the train, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, they go down to the train stop and park their car.
My point is, 200-mile range is sufficient for most people.
Then why is the e-tron having
issues?
But
not to buy
issues?
One.
E-tron is having a bunch of other issues. But and 300 miles is better, let's face it. I agree with Robin. I mean, But, you know, I have two cars. One has a 600-mile range. Now when I get in a car that has only 300 or 400-mile range, I think it's pathetic. I am personally used to driving 600 miles before having to refuel
and
my car.
That is a very true situation for gasoline-powered cars as well. As a friend of ours, or mine, and Jay may know who it is, has just let go of her Audi A5.
Oh, I ran into her.
And she now has a Mazda CX-3, which I want to report on if I get time in this show. And she absolutely loves it, but she laments the fact that it's only got a 10-gallon tank. And I said, what are you crying about? You're getting 31.1 average miles per gallon on your computer thing that I saw on your car the other day. Well, it's only got a 10-gallon tank, so I can only go 300 miles. So to Jay's point, yes. He's got a 600-mile range vehicle and a 300, and he doesn't like the 300-mile range vehicle, and they're both fossil fuel cars.
Right, yeah. because it's something else to deal with.
Being able to go 600 miles between fill-ups, yes, it is.
Yeah,
it's nice to be able to refuel when it's convenient. And not having to
because you're worrying about it. Yeah.
And having driven up from the city once, looking desperately for diesel. That was pretty, you know.
I went to Canada round trip once and desperately wanted to get back into the U.S. for diesel. And my light was on, and I was going to Stowe, Vermont or something, where there are not many diesel gasoline stations. And I was very close to running out of diesel with like 590 miles on my Jetta wagon.
Yeah.
Back some years ago. So, yes, we can foist the anxiety level on ourselves by driving the way some of us drive between fill-ups. And that is maximizing the mileage before you get to empty and fill up, or filling up every 150 miles when you see a diesel station so you don't have the anxiety range.
All right, so we've got 6 minutes left. Do you want to talk about the Mazda? Do you want to talk about
Jay may have some safety stuff, but let me just talk about the Mazda CX-3 because Jay's been a big proponent of Mazda driving and Zoom Zoom, and they drive great. And I have not had the occasion to drive any Mazda until I got the occasion to drive the CX-3.
Did you go and drive a CX-5 lately,
I
too?
I drove a Mazda 3, actually, sedan.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
right.
That was wonderful, too. But the CX-3 is almost a true GTI alternative. Jay may have a hard time thinking about that, but it's got an amazingly fun driving aspect to it. Plus, it's all-wheel drive. This one was, at any rate. And it's got a sport mode, which is truly a sport mode. It's got an exhaust sound, which is really interestingly good. And as this owner now says, she loves hearing the exhaust sound in sport mode. And she's driving in sport mode and still getting 31.1 miles per gallon. And it's really a hoot. And you can go out and buy pre-owned or lightly used CX-3s for well under 20 grand with up to 30,000 miles on them, and they're like brand new. And so I'm a big now fan of the Mazda CX-3 as an alternative to a Volkswagen GTI, which is long.
He's come around to Mazda.
We're going to get a bi-weekly report.
I'm not going to get one. I'm too old.
What are we going to do, though, with now? Because we have to also train people to not want that sound, or like the synthesized sound in their e-cars.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah,
don't get me started. Don't get me started. Even the BMW M Sport cars have synthesized sound.
I've got to get this in this show. I saw a story about in the magazine. Jamie have seen it. There's a Toyota Centurion or something. It's like a four-door sedan that has an $18,000 exhaust system in it that's supposed to sound like the a race car. $18,000 to put this exhaust system in this 19-something or other.
You can get the real
Toyota
engine for that price.
You can get the real engine for that price, but it's like for a Lamborghini or something. I just couldn't believe it. I wanted to write into the story saying that's not worth it. $18,000 for that, but somebody did it.
Couple things on the safety front. For those of
look
us,
look out! Your like, stay awake.
No, I was going to talk about the. I don't know if anybody saw the ending of the Daytona 500.
Oh yes,
we did.
And
it was on the news broadcast. So it was nights.
It was ugly, right? And
played over and
images
over.
Of Dale Earnhardt almost 20 years ago, not came surviving back. A crash that was way lesser than that.
Yeah.
And seeing Ryan Newman walk out of the hospital only a couple of days later.
With his hands on his two kids and walking.
It makes you realize how far we've come on
safety.
On safety, passive safety on cars. And I think there is some, what we see on race cars eventually trickles down to cars to some extent. Obviously, we don't have roll bars. We don't have these seats, we don't have hands devices in production cars, but the structure of cars and roll bars has become increasingly stronger over the years. And again, as my point, there's no comparison between a car that was made in the last 4 or 5 years and one from 20 years ago.
And
for those of people out there who have, let's say, kids getting ready to buy their first car, they're getting ready to help them get their first car, my advice is always get as new a car as you can.
Well, there's no question Jay's right, but to that end, and which is why good technology is worth having, the pillars have been getting thicker.
Yep.
Midway, the C pillars, the B pillars, the
there
A
is
pillars,
a downside to that, as
there's
we know.
There's a downside
especially
is visibility.
People who can't turn our heads anymore.
Well, that's right, visibility, but you've got now the side mirror markers for letting you know when it's a trailer truck in your blind spot. If you're in your pillar, you can't see it. And you've got tech is going. There's a new tech story out in Automotive News. I'll let you in a second. Tech aims to detect wrong-way motorists. Boy, that would be an interesting tech to try to stop these people who get on going the wrong way on the Merritt Parkway or something and crash into somebody.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the ad for, I think it's the Chevy or the GMC truck? With the cameras that now, if you're towing a trailer.
Yes, invisible.
Invisible trailer.
They're selling it as the invisible trailer.
Scary if you have it on invisible mode and you've got the trailer behind you and you're backing up and forget that you've got a trailer in your car.
The point is, these cameras on cars have become...
They're magical.
Magical. I mean, Audi started that a few years ago where they have, I think, 7 or 8 cameras, so you can see your own car from above.
Right.
Well, the other thing I like on one of my Jeeps is that you can push the rear view camera button or something on the screen and have the rear view going as you're going down the road at 70 miles an hour and see what's going on behind you if you are so inclined to want to do that
periodically. And as long as your brain is able to multitask.
Yeah. And anything more safety-wise?
I was going to say, when you're driving, and I just saw, I was watching a video on YouTube of a tractor trailer that had a moment of inattention and ran into a bunch of cars on the highway.
Yeah.
My point is, keep your distances on highways, but also look in your mirrors. Don't let big trucks get close to you, and if they are getting close, just
get away.
Get away.
Yeah.
Yep.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.